from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point, Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it!
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. As always, with Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. The SEC and the ACC still playing football. The Pac-12, the Big Ten, not playing football in the fall, postponing their fall sports seasons earlier this week. But the ACC and the SEC are standing strong on the systems and the seasons that they've put into play in order to have a season this fall. And some conflicting news for Syracuse in the ACC. You've got the big positives in terms of John Wildack got into the COVID numbers for Syracuse, and only five tests were positive for student athletes throughout the entire process for the Orange, and the last 4 weeks have had zero student athletes testing positive. So it seems like the not complete bubble, but kind of bubble that these athletes are in on campus, well, or before students are back on for classes, seems to have worked, and you've got really good numbers. But the negative news in terms of Matthew Gutierrez of The Athletic reports that there are going to be some big name Syracuse football players opting out of the season soon because of long-term health concerns and the safety precautions in play by the ACC, some external teams, some concerns with Liberty. And he did mention that that could easily include multiple starting players. So some good in terms of what you hear from Wildack, some bad in terms of what you hear from Goody. Where do you stand? What is there to make of this, Ben?
Really confused. Honestly, it's really tough to get much of a gauge. And I understand why for a lot of the players it's confusing too. It's a difficult time because I think, as we mentioned a lot in the last episode, there still isn't much of a plan. And then you look around the ACC, which is a pretty spread out conference, and I just think there are a lot of different situations that Syracuse is going to encounter this year in terms of opponents. And I understand why that would make a difference. When you're looking at cases, I saw a tweet from Nate Mink of Syracuse.com, a football reporter for them. And he highlighted something that I didn't even know, is that NC State, Notre Dame, Boston College, they all have incredible testing numbers as well, like mm-hmm. Syracuse. I think all of them, they've had the lowest is Notre Dame with 600 tests administered. None of them have over 10 positives. Notre Dame, that I just mentioned, only has four. So that's a good situation. And then there's bad news in the last week coming out of Florida State as well, where there seems to be the players aren't exactly sure that they're getting all the information they need. So I just think it's a confusing time and a really confusing time for a 21-year-old who's trying to strap up and play football right now, but doesn't know all the science, or even if they know everything that we know, like all of us don't really know all the science. So it's tough. And I understand to a certain extent why some of the players would rather just play it safe this year and move on to next season.
Yeah, and we asked you guys on Twitter to gauge your confidence level of a Syracuse football season this fall at Ostrom Avenue Pod on Twitter. You can find us there. Follow us there for more content like this to get your voice heard. 33% saying probably not. Oh, no. That's 33%, probably not in terms of the confidence gauge. You've got 55%, so the overwhelming majority of votes for probably not. And when you include the 33 to 0% range, that's going to consist of 80% of your vote. So the majority of our Ostrom listeners here are not at the highest confidence level in terms of there being a Syracuse football season this fall, but there are some optimists in there. So we'll give them their credit as well. 15% saying that there's going to be like a 2/3 chance. We wish there was that 50-50 split, because I feel like a lot more people would fall into that, but it seems like the confidence level is not that high. Despite some good news out of John Wildack, it seems like that news from Matthew Gutierrez yesterday resonated a little bit deeper with the Syracuse fans and the Ostrom listeners.
And I think an interesting thing about this, you mentioned at the beginning, the Big 12 and the Big 10, pardon me, and the Pac-12 have suspended their seasons. The ACC and the SEC at this point look like they're going forward. The Big 12, like, we have no clue what's going on with them right now. And I don't know if this is true just from reading reports, but it was being painted earlier this week like the Big 12's decision has a major bearing on the SEC. And I think the SEC's has a major bearing on the ACC's decision. If the SEC were to say, we're not having football, I don't imagine the ACC would either. So I think if you're an ACC fan caught in limbo here, watching the Big 12 is one thing that could have a major indication on if Syracuse, Clemson, and all these ACC teams will actually get off the ground and play this year. Because it's almost like a tug of war where there's like the we don't want to play and do want to play factions. And the Big 12 is kind of quietly in the middle right now, not really making a decision either way.
Yeah, the Big 12 definitely could stir a domino effect in terms of the negative. I don't think that the Big 12 opting to play brings other conferences into play. But I think if the Big 12 decides to postpone its season, that's going to cause the domino effect that brings the AC or the SEC out. And I don't think the ACC wants to stand alone as the only conference to do that because of the liability that comes alongside it, because of the other issues that come alongside it. So that is the big focus. But to kind of look into this future season, whenever it may be, right now it's scheduled for less than a month away. However, it could be postponed depending on, you know, whatever comes out in the next week or two. But we're talking Tony White. We're talking Syracuse football. We're talking Syracuse's new defensive coordinator from Arizona State. And we've got two interviews today introducing you to Tony White and introducing you to the new defense that you'll be seeing in the dome, on the field, in orange, in blue, in white. That's the 3-3-5. So to start things off, we talked with Donnie Druin, who covers Arizona State football for Sports Illustrated. He broke down who Tony White is and a little bit of that 3-3-5 defense. He had a lot to talk about, and he's got a couple of tidbits. If you're doing some traveling, we've got a lot of food coverage hidden in these interviews as well, so stay tuned for that. We now welcome on Donnie Druin. He's the Arizona State football writer for Sports Illustrated. Donnie, it's been a busy few days for you with the Pac-12 news. How's everything going?
I wish I could say things are going a little bit better, but we're just taking it day by day. As you know, the Pac-12 season got postponed to the spring. So now it's just a matter of picking up the pieces of the mess that was created a couple of days ago officially. And everybody's healthy out here, so we can't really complain.
All right. It's been a tough few days with that news, but a little bit more tough news. I saw your Champions League bracket started 0-1 yesterday with that PSG comeback.
It's a For 89 minutes, I was looking great. And then, PSG decided the PSG. So we'll see. I'm a big Barcelona fan, so I don't have a whole lot of hope against Bayern Munich starting tomorrow. But, I'm just really excited soccer's back, and I love Champions League. So even though my pick was wrong, I was still really excited to see a great game.
Oh, yeah, it was an unreal game. Crazy comeback in the last, 4 or 5 minutes. Everything past the 89th minute, so some utter chaos, and the PSG will end up moving on and advancing. But in light of everything going on, I mean, you've still got some sports to cover now, but with that Pac-12 news, what other ways has your reporting and then your coverage been altered by the pandemic lately?
Well, I like to think of, myself as an X's and O's guy. I'm not terribly great at writing a whole lot of off-season stuff. I really thrive during actual football season when I'm able to cover teams and players. I'm able to, analyze things that happened last week, analyze what's going to happen the following week. And obviously now that's kind of stripped away. So, it's just a matter of being creative. You always got to find a way to get the content out there. And, I think we'll really see, how creative people can be and, whether or not we're able to kind of push through it like the players and coaches have to.
Yeah, and so we're joined by Donnie today to learn a little more about Tony White, who is Syracuse's new defensive coordinator, and the defensive scheme he's implementing in training camp. So to start simply, what can you tell us about White? What is, you know, what kind of guy is he? What kind of coach is he? What is the kind of elevator pitch of Tony White?
Yeah, so Tony White is a younger guy. I think he can be classified as a motivator. A lot of the players around him seem to cling to him, you know. And one of the interviews he gave right before he got the nod for the DC job at ASU prior to leaving, you know, he said that he wanted his players to play with a little confidence, with a little swagger. And I think that tells you all you need to know about Tony White. You know, he's an energetic coach. He's not afraid to let things rip on the defensive side of the ball. And he's really a player that, you know, really a coach that players can flock to. And I think we can see that reflected by his recruiting.
Yeah. And to speak on recruiting, he's a scout.com 2-time Mountain West Recruiter of the Year. How do you think that'll transfer over to Syracuse in an ACC football recruiting scheme?
So despite not having any 4-star recruits to his resume, Tony White has been able to recruit a whole lot of 3-star cornerbacks. He has a pipeline to California, but we've also seen him grab talent from Florida, Louisiana, Texas, and even some guys from PA, which I know is probably a decent pipeline for, you know, your guys' Syracuse boys. He hasn't recruited any super big names, but somehow he's been able to maintain really solid secondaries through his years at San Diego State and at Arizona State. So I think that just kind of speaks to his ability as a coach. While not getting the 5-star top tier talent and going to schools like LSU and Alabama, he's still able to produce and put out one of the better secondaries in the country year after year.
And for Syracuse, they've been making some big time plays in the secondary with a big commitment the other day in Deuce Chestnut, and with, you know, Andre Sisco coming back and some big other names in that regard. So the 3-3-5 kind of a really good system in order to fit his recruiting scheme, and where Syracuse already has a couple of big names. So that was kind of the key point to this hire for White, because both he and Zach Arnett were running the 3-3-5 after, you know, some brief stints with Rocky Long. So at the surface level, what can Orange fans expect from the 3-3-5 whenever they hit the field?
It's different. It's different for sure. And, you know, I don't want to say Syracuse fans won't see the 3-3-5 a whole lot, but college football defenses and even pro defenses don't really go base defense anymore. It's a whole lot of sub packaging. It's entirely dependent on what the offense is trying to do. But in that regard, the 3-3-5 does give you a lot of versatility in terms of where you want to line your guys up. I think one of the strengths of the 3-3-5, for people who don't know, 3 down linemen, 3 linebackers, and 5 secondary players. One of the strengths to it is you're able to kind of commit to one facet of the game. If it's 3rd and 1 and you think they're about to run the ball, you can align your guys in certain gaps and in certain places to make sure while you still have those 5 guys in the secondary, you're still able to fill the box at 6 guys at all times.
Yeah, and you talked about the versatility as one of the big strengths. Are there any big weaknesses that should be looked out for, any disadvantages to the system that you might be putting in place whenever it happens?
Definitely, yeah. So while I think another strength is going to be pre-snap movement, and that was one of the things I wanted to touch with you, was that Tony White, during his days at ASU, pre-snap movement was a really big thing for the Sun Devils, you know, just trying to confuse the quarterback, trying not to give away their assignment or, you know, any given duty on the play. Pre-snap movement was a very big thing for the Sun Devils. Oh, talking is hard. And I think it'll be a very big thing for the Orange as well. Speaking on the weaknesses of it, you're really relying on your 3 down linemen and your 3 linebackers to cover a whole lot of gaps and a whole lot of space. So, you know, you really need to make sure gap integrity is the number one thing, just granted that you have a lesser amount of linemen and a lesser amount of linebackers to cover said space in the box. I think the most important thing, and I don't even know if this is a weakness, but it's a really hard defense to learn. You know, a 3-3-5 is not your standard defense, not taught in the school of football, whereas like a 4-3 or a 3-4 is. You're going to need some really intelligent players to understand the system. And it's going to be a learning curve for coaches and players. But luckily for a guy like Tony White, he's been coaching it for over 10 years. So I feel like if there's anybody Syracuse needed to run that 3-3-5, it's probably White.
And so White fills the coaching role of the 3-3-5. What kind of players and what kind of play style are you going to want to look for in terms of, you know, the position players coming in to fill these a little bit altered roles?
Yeah, so I think the 3-3-5 allows you obviously to have more secondary players on the field and less more athletic players on the field. You know, it's a very good thing to have against spread offenses, which is becoming more and more popular in the ACC. So I do understand why Syracuse went and wanted to go to 3-3-5 regardless of White was the head coach or not. I'm sorry, defensive coordinator. You're going to have a lot of versatile guys. You know, while you may have guys that only play corner or only play safety, you are going to have a linebacker or maybe even like a nickelback or a safety that's going to play all over the field. You know, one day, 1 week he might be playing at the nickel corner. He might be having those duties out on the outside of the boundary. And then another week he might be playing deep high safety. It's just all dependent on what the offense brings to the 3-3-5 and, you know, what they're able to set against them.
And then for you, in terms of your time watching Tony White and seeing what he kind of does in his, you know, time as a cornerbacks coach, and he wasn't really able to show his complete system as his, you know, his defensive coordinator stint at ASU was only a very brief time. But what else could you expect from him when he does get the full reins in terms of controlling a defense?
A lot of creativity, and I know I touched on that as far as my writing goes, but on the gridiron, I think Tony White's going to be really creative. Luckily, with a 3-3-5, there's a lot of things you can do with it. Sometimes it can look like it's running a 4-2. Sometimes it looks like you're running a 4-3, but the personnel out there, regardless, is going to be a 3-3-5. So you can expect Tony White to throw it a kitchen sink at offenses whenever it comes to, you know, things like blitzing out of the slot, things like, you know, it's just like inter, you know, gap switching, whenever it comes to stunts inside the interior. There's a whole lot that we can do. And like you said, unfortunately, we didn't get to see Tony White, you know, unleash the full reins here at ASU. But even then, whenever he was just a secondary coach, he had a lot of input with the defensive coordinator and how the defense ran. So, no, I think Tony White can do a lot of things with the 3-3-5. It's just a matter of installing it and making sure everybody knows the basics and not getting ahead of themselves before they go to the complicated stuff.
All right, last question here. We're gonna finish with a food question. Get off the field for a second. So if I find myself at a game at Sun Devil Stadium, or you also cover the Steelers, or at Heinz Field, where's the go-to spot pregame for a meal and a beer?
Okay, Pittsburgh pregame is going to be the infamous Permane Brothers. It's a little bit outside of Pittsburgh. I don't know if you heard of it at all. It's a very famous sandwich place outside of the Pittsburgh area. So if you ever get a chance to go to a Steelers game, I highly recommend going to Permane's prior. And if you're down in Tempe, you're getting ready to catch a Sun Devils game, Mill Avenue. It's a very big, long strip where all the college kids party and hang out, bunch of bars and restaurants down the strip. It's a vibe for sure. So, you know, if you ever catch yourself in Tempe, make sure you go to Mill Avenue.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the time. We really appreciate having you on.
Hey, I really appreciate it, guys. Keep up the great work, and I hope you get to see some football this year.
Another thank you to Donnie Druin. A lot of fun stuff there, some good conversation. His Champions League predictions have continued to slide, unfortunately, for him. But thankfully for us, it seems like his football knowledge was top of the line. Ben, what was your biggest takeaway in terms of Tony White and the 3-3-5 from that?
I think my biggest takeaway is a White thing kind of separate from the 3-3-5. Not that I'm not excited about the defensive formation, but when he talked about White as a motivator and as a coach, as a person, I really think that is going to be a huge impact that White has on the program. Dino Babers is trying to rebuild the Syracuse culture and change it a little bit. It's not the same program that maybe it has been in years previous, not to mention just bringing in players from elsewhere, but also just the attitude, I think, that he brings into the locker room. And I think when you have an energetic guy like Babers alongside an energetic guy like Tony White, you're really going to get the best out of your players. He showed that with some of the work he did in Arizona State with some under-recruited and junior college defensive backs. And I think that he can continue to use his strong passion for the game to motivate Syracuse's DBs and defensive linemen, because he's the whole DC now, into making this a great defense going forward.
Yeah, my big takeaway was, you know, a little bit on the recruiting side. We know that he has won some recruiting awards, but he doesn't necessarily have the biggest names to his recruiting resume. But to hear what Donnie had to say about it, and then to see that, you know, he's already in the mixer. Tony White is one of the key guys recruiting a three-star prospect in the 2021 class for Syracuse in Jalen Moss. And so he's got that experience. And you said the, you know, the confidence, the motivator, the guys flock to him. I think that's really going to help in the recruiting aspects as well, to bring more players in, to help bring more top tier, especially defensive players in, just because of the system he runs and some of the personnel that he's going to be immediately able to work with is going to help develop this as what we're starting to see is a little bit of a DBU and, you know, maybe starting to bring in some other big names as well as, you know, Deuce Chestnut coming in a couple of years. So we'll keep on this track. We'll keep with Tony White. We'll keep with the 3-3-5. We'll keep with that look ahead. Ben caught up with Chris Cartman of Sun Devil Source covering Arizona State football as well. Another great interview, a lot more in depth on the 3-3-5. So get your notepads out because, you know, you can figure out how to pick apart this 3-3-5 or run this 3-3-5 pretty quickly because Cartman's got everything you need to know about it.
Another interview here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. This time we go across the country, out west. We're here with Chris Cartman of Sun Devil Source. Chris covers Arizona State Sun Devil football for 24/7 Sports. Thank you for joining us, Chris. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. It's a good time. It's getting warmer. We're starting to head back to school, and I saw recently that you've been posting a little about the NBA playoffs and a bit of the downfall maybe of the Phoenix Suns, who went 8-0 but weren't able to qualify, unfortunately. How's the reaction now? A little bit of time to decompress from the heartbreak of the Suns.
Yeah, heartbreak city, right? To go 8-0 in the bubble is a pretty unbelievable accomplishment. I think I saw one Bleacher Report story that predicted they'd go 0-8. So they did a lot better than that. You can't really hang your head when you go undefeated, even if you don't make the playoffs. I think that they're headed for a much better season.
Well, I'll definitely be rooting for them. I've been a bit of like a closet Suns fan because I'm from Canada. So I grew up when Nash was with the Suns. And so I've always had a bit of a soft spot. So hopefully that they'll be knocking on the door next year. There was some worse news, of course, coming out west recently. The Pac-12 has decided to suspend fall football, at least. Maybe not a full cancellation yet, but nothing going on in the fall. Someone who's been covering the Pac-12 for a long time now, what was your reaction? How have you been dealing with that?
Can't say that I'm surprised by this. Sort of the writing on the wall from talking to everybody around Arizona State and just across the Pac-12, just have a lot of resources over the years. And I'll be interested to see what happens with the other three conferences in Power 5 and whether they're able to get it together and get it going. I think if they do, then it gives a blueprint for the Pac-12 and the Big Ten to be able to do so pretty shortly thereafter. They could even maybe accelerate their timeline from instead of going in January or February, maybe moving it up to like November or something like that. And if they don't work out at the other conferences, it's going to reflect well on the Pac-12 and Big Ten for just kind of being ahead of the curve, just insightfully about it. It's a very difficult situation. I see both sides of this spectrum. I think that the NCAA's regressiveness with not increasing stipends or finding a way to make players more just happier and just more content with their situation earlier on has contributed in part to this. Not necessarily would have changed any of the advice of the independent doctors or experts on this sort of thing. But there is, of course, just a risk that exists with all football players. You have the CTE thing that's out there. You have a lot of challenges that are related to the health and wellness of players. And I'm not somebody who feels strongly one way or the other about this. I really kind of see both sides and I understand the circumstances and why we are where we're at.
And there are kind of two ways to look at it. I'm interested to hear what you think. By suspending the fall season, do you think they've increased the chances that there are sports in the spring or that the chance of sports happening in general has decreased now that two, and if you include the Big East, three major conferences have canceled their fall football?
It's an interesting question. I always kind of suspected that if they did play, it would be in the spring, especially in the Pac-12. And as you get more understanding about the virus, you get a longer amount of time to examine some of the heart implications And testing probably improves the reliability and the amount of testing, and then the prospects for both treatments, therapeutics, and then a vaccine. I think that it increases the likelihood. I think that we're probably going to be in a much different place in terms of our understanding and our ability to deal with this virus in 4, 5, or 6 months from now. And so I think it, I don't know that the decision now makes it more or less likely necessarily in January or February, but I always did think that if it was going to happen, it was much more likely to take place then.
So regardless of whether it happens next semester or not, there won't be football for at least part of this fall. What are you going to do to fill the time? I mean, this is your full-time job. Are you thinking of picking up a hobby or learning an instrument? What's going to fill in that Pac-12 football void for you?
Yeah, so fortunately, we do cover recruiting really aggressively in football and basketball, and that's not stopping. And it's actually been quite a busy summer in that respect, because what's happened is a lot of these recruits are nervous about not having a senior season, not being able to acquire more scholarship offers. And it's created a domino effect, actually, where there've been a lot more commitments earlier than there have historically been in any cycle, because the top schools are able to put more pressure on some of the top kids. And then it's a cascading thing. So ASU picked up 10 commitments in an 11-day period in July and had 19 commitments already. And at this point in time, in a normal year, it probably would be like half of that. And there's never been a stretch like that. So I think there's going to be a lot more volatility moving forward, especially if they do allow visits with kids in October, November, or December. And then we changed our content production schedule to some degree in anticipation of this delay possibly happening. So a lot of the things that we do in the summer, like player capsules and position previews and rankings of the best spots on the roster and every player on the roster in terms of their readiness to play, we haven't even really done most of that. So there's going to be a good probably 2 months of that still to follow. And also evaluations of all of these 19 commitments. We haven't rolled those out either. So there's quite a bit. And then I am working on some other kind of projects that are unrelated to Sun Devil Source that I'm trying to kind of get going. Don't really want to go into too much of that stuff, but there's potential for one thing that could become widely known if it's able to work out.
Well, the secrecy is intriguing me, but I'll leave it there for now.
I'll tell you off the air.
All right. I'm very interested to hear that. Now let's get to the main thing that we're here to talk about today. Tony White, 335. Danny Gonzalez brought it to ASU in 2018 when he and Tony White came, and Gonzalez was the defensive coordinator. What was your first reaction to this new formation and this unorthodox defense?
Good question. So essentially, I had seen the defense prior because Arizona State had played San Diego State a couple times, and it originated from Rocky Long at New Mexico. He basically took some different pieces of a few different types of schemes that he all put together into structuring his philosophy. And then Danny Gonzalez worked under Rocky Long for a very long time, basically his entire career, for 20 years or more at New Mexico. And then they went to San Diego State and they implemented the 3-3-5. And then Tony White became part of that after being a linebacker in the Pac-12 at UCLA. And so I had kind of studied it a little bit and been familiar, because we do a lot of just a breakdown of ASU's opponents, their schemes and style and personnel, et cetera. And that's sort of one of my favorite parts of the job anyways, is pouring into that kind of stuff. This is a defense that is, it has been unique to college football. Now it's starting to kind of spread a little bit more because of the success that Rocky Long had with it at San Diego State. It's somewhat of an equalizer type of a defense. I would describe it as being akin to like an air raid style of an offense, or even maybe like a single T wishbone type of an offense, in that it's designed so that teams that don't have as much talent are going to be able to compete with better, more talented teams. So that's why when you see San Diego State success beat ASU beat Stanford a couple times, I believe, over the years, and competitive with other schools in the Pac-12, it's because this is a very difficult scheme to adjust to within your schedule on a week-to-week basis. And even across an entire year, it's an advantage, particularly early on in the adjustment to it. So Syracuse's opponents for a year or two are going to have a very difficult time adapting to this when you only have a week or so within a season to get all of the advanced scouting and the scheme in place. So there's a lot of pluses about it in that respect.
And for those who don't know, the 3-3-5 defense, three down linemen, three linebackers, five defensive backs. So an extra defensive back on the field. Talking with Chris Cartman, Sun Devil Sports. From 2015 to 17, the Sun Devils defense was all right. It wasn't at their peak. They allowed 32 or more points in every season. But in Gonzalez's two seasons, they allowed 26 and then around 22 points per game. How much of that improvement do you attribute to the 3-3-5?
Definitely a good amount of it. The previous coach at ASU, head coach Todd Graham, very aggressive, defensive-minded scheme, but they made a lot of mistakes in recruiting, and they didn't adapt to their personnel. And so they really struggled, especially against the pass, in his last three seasons. In fact, in a two-year period, they were last nationally against the pass. Not the year before Gonzalez arrived, but the 2 years prior to that. This scheme, the 3-3-5, is one in which it's I would say it's moderately aggressive. It is one in which they're going to rush typically four or five players. You look at defenses in terms of either being gap cancellation or in terms of being gap control, okay? And this is the gap control style defenses are much more what you would typically associate with three down linemen, but more in like 3-4s where you're two gapping and you're basically occupying your nose, guards occupying the A gap. You got the linebackers coming and occupying the B gaps. C gaps are contained by your ends. This is different in that it is a gap cancellation scheme with three down players. That's something that makes it different. And what I mean by that is the players at both of the defensive line level and the linebacker level are very aggressively trying to get in between the gaps between linemen, A gap center either side, B gap guard, and then even outside the tackles. And they do it in an asymmetric fashion. Meaning that most defenses that are very aggressive, they will slant the front and they will overload one side and they will come at you in a linear, in terms of everybody going the same direction, even though it's at an angle fashion. This scheme is not like that at all. And that's what makes it very difficult and unpredictable, is that you will have guys going completely different directions and you will see players looping and coming around, burning around edges and scraping and doing things that you just would not anticipate. Two ends will drop, linebackers will come on pressure. And so there's an unpredictability about it that is very high. And it makes it so that linemen, offensive linemen, and just overall protections on the offensive side, they don't know what's happening. They don't know what's going to come at them on any given play. It's not predictable. They've never faced anything like this. Sometimes guys will show like they're coming, drop off. There'll be two guys coming at different angles in weird ways, and they're not going to be used to that. And then because you have three guys up front, you don't know which two other guys might be blitzing. You could have two out of three different linebackers. They will bring safeties because they'll play, they're called Ranger safeties, and those are basically two of the safeties, and the third safety, they tailor, I don't know what it is at Syracuse, but they tailor it specifically to the name of something at the school. So at ASU, it was the Tillman safety, named after Pat Tillman. It was the Aztec when they were at San Diego State. At New Mexico, it was the Lobo, I believe that it was. And Brian Urlacher, who I'm sure most people will know, famous NFL linebacker, he actually played that position in New Mexico for Danny Gonzalez, or Rocky Long and Danny Gonzalez. It's a very much, that is the hybrid position. You need that player to be able to come down and play inside in the box as a safety sometimes. You need that player to be able to cover the number three receiver in trips, so that the innermost closest to the ball receiver in trips in man situations. And then you're going to need him at times to play in some robber coverages where he's kind of a freelancer. And then also sometimes he's going to play like a cover two, a Tampa two style middle linebacker, to where he has a middle intermediate zone with two zones splitting the field behind him. That could be either the two corners, the two Ranger safeties, or in a one of each in a different type of a look. And then they also will play, so they play a lot of man coverage, okay? They play a ton of man free, essentially one safety high, and they play a lot of cover three. But Herm Edwards, as a head coach, in the NFL, played a lot of Tampa 2 coverage. And so what I saw as an evolution in the last 2 years was ASU started to incorporate more cover 2 out of this base 3-3-5 and then some quarters coverage. So the adaptability is very high. You can tailor it to your personnel. And it's really about keeping the opponent off balance, both in a preparation standpoint and in a pre-snap standpoint, so that the quarterback doesn't know where are these guys going to be at, who's coming, who's not coming, are they going to be in a middle field open or middle field closed type of a scheme, are the corners on the edges going to be, are they looking like they're playing zone but they're going to flip to man right at the snap, or vice versa based upon where their eyes are. There's a lot of these sorts of nuances to this defense that make it a lot trickier, I would say, than the average type of a defense that opponents are going to face.
Yeah, I can definitely see where that might confuse some opposing offenses. That is a lot for an offensive lineman, yes, to take in 1 week when he's played probably all of high school and college and never seen a defense like that before. And I think when you think of the spread offenses that Syracuse is trying to stop, you look at a team like Clemson or maybe someone like NC State. But there are also a lot of power run schemes in the ACC, like Pitt and Boston College. Do you think the formation can hold up well against teams that are more focused on running the ball than throwing it deep?
Yeah, see, this is actually one of the things that I had thought about reflects well on their ability to implement it at Syracuse. Because when they are operating effectively, they have shut down inside run at a pretty high level. In fact, that was one of the best things that they did for the most part at ASU, is I think they were probably second or third best probably in the conference in that regard. And then what they do against these, the high tempo teams that play a lot of 10 personnel, four receivers on the field, they'll put an extra defensive back on out there. So what they'll do is they'll take a linebacker off and they'll put a sixth defensive back on the field. They did that on base downs against USC running the air raid this past year, Washington State, same thing. So they were able to, and they were pretty effective actually at being able to implement some of the things they wanted to do as a result of having an extra DB on the field. But then they also did a very good job at making teams sort of stretch out the run and try to get outside the tackles because of this sort of asymmetric pressures and the gap cancellation ways that they take away a lot of these sort of interior run lanes. When there, it seems like there's been one game where it hasn't worked, in a typical year where they get gashed through the interior because, just something about it is just not working the way that it should. And so that's always going to be a possibility. But that's more of an execution and an adjustment in game standpoint than it is something that is philosophically, I think, wrong with the scheme itself. I think that structurally, it's actually quite solid.
Now, I'm going to put you a little on the spot here. Let's say you're the opposing coach, you're BC, and you're going to play Syracuse week one. What's the big weakness that you're going to pick out? Syracuse is playing the 3-3-5 now. What do you want to do to try and pick apart that base defense?
It's sort of a tough thing without having a fluent understanding of the opposing personnel strengths and weaknesses, right? Because, if you're light at the point of attack, then I'm going to try to run at you on the edges. Like if the defensive ends, ASU didn't have a lot of stout physical defensive ends, which you kind of need in this scheme. You need your defensive ends to be full service players, because what'll happen is sometimes they'll have to kick inside to a three technique. Sometimes they're playing like a four eye where they're on the shoulder of the tackle. Sometimes they're playing a five. And what happens is when those guys are more pass rush type bodies and athletes, and they're not as physically stout, there's an ability to populate to the edges with this offense with tight ends, fullbacks, et cetera. And you can actually run the ball at the edges of this scheme. And then if you don't have safeties who are able to play really physically and come downhill to the perimeter, there's opportunities to get into the bubble actions against these. A lot of the perimeter screens, jailbreak type stuff, that can be a factor. If you don't have good man coverage ability on the outside, you're going to get some one-on-ones somewhere in this type of a thing. And so you can exploit that vertically at times. So there are things, but it really comes down to what opponents have with their personnel and in what ways that those things can sort of be taken advantage of.
So to work back a little now, this the same year that Danny Gonzalez arrived at ASU, Tony White, who is now the Syracuse defensive coordinator, took over as the Arizona State cornerbacks coach. How do you think he impacted the ASU secondary during his tenure with the team?
Well, first, let me just say that I've covered ASU football for 17 years and practices and everything. And Tony White is as genuinely nice of a person as I've ever encountered. I mean, he is a salt of the earth, phenomenal human being. And I would say that he has head coach type qualities. You learn which coaches have that sort of presence, that ability to connect with players and boosters and media and all of these hats that people have to wear. So he, in my opinion, is somebody that Syracuse fans really should like. He's not going to be a super rah-rah emotions on the sleeve guy, but that's a stabilizing sort of a thing for players. Now, as a position coach and on the field, I think he is demanding, but he's demanding in a extremely respectful way that players relate to. Him being a player himself, and at a high level and understanding kind of the way that you interact with guys, I think that works really well now. I think he creates ways to challenge the individual that is tailored specifically to them. And that is something that I think a lot of coaches struggle with. The coaches that they have a one note sort of approach and style, and they can't figure out how exactly to get to all the different personality types to motivate, encourage, and inspire them. I think that's something that Tony White was able to do with guys like Chase Lucas and Jack Jones, who are ASU starting corners. Both of them could play in the NFL, I think, and others in the secondary. Danny Gonzalez worked more with the safeties, but Tony White, eagle eye, had the ability to see exactly in real time on the field who had a breakdown, who had a technical error, who wasn't lined up exactly where they were supposed to be pre-snap, and who didn't have their eyes where they needed to be. He sees all that stuff extremely effectively. And I also think he's going to game plan very well for each individual type of opponent. So a lot of positives about Tony White. And that's not just lip service. That is, like, I legitimately believe every single one of those things.
You mentioned the name Jack Jones, and he's important to me, at least, because he was an All Pac-12 honorable mention last year, as was Kobe Williams, two cornerbacks for ASU, both junior college guys, not major recruits. And that's probably more of what he'll see at Syracuse, is junior college and in the three-star range. And you're confident in his ability to develop these guys into top players in college football and even potentially pro prospects?
Absolutely. And in fact, it even starts before then, because what they did so well at San Diego State was identify the recruits that are undervalued that also fit extremely well within their scheme. So I would say time and time again, they got kids at San Diego State that easily could have played in the Pac-12, but they didn't. And so I personally like the people who are very not not herd mentality, not groupthink. They're following their own sort of sense of who they need to recruit and target and why. So they do a good job of who they bring into the program. It's going to be passionate kids that fit their scheme. And then once you get them there, I think he's going to do a good job of training them so that they are broadly skilled and that they understand situationally what they are supposed to be doing and why and how. It's not that it's easy, and it will take some time for a lot of these guys, but because he also shows that he cares about them and he's going to, you know, kind of take them under his shoulder and love them up a little bit while also being hard, he finds the right balance to be a very good developmental coach in that respect.
Well, Syracuse has made some major strides in recruiting, especially with a four-star corner this year. So it'll be exciting to see what Tony can add to the staff in recruiting and really open up more of that West Coast that Syracuse doesn't access all that often. We've done a lot of football talk. Now I've heard enough from you. I appreciate all the expert knowledge. I want to hear on something else that you specialize in. You say in your Twitter bio you're an aspiring food critic. And so I want to know, we've had some other guys on that are pretty food inclined, shall I say, from the Syracuse area, but we don't get many from the West Coast. So I want to know, what's the best dining spot in the Pac-12? It can be an ASU spot, or it can be somewhere else that you've gone on the road. But of the entire Pac-12, if we ever get the chance to travel out there for some sort of non-conference game, where am I stopping?
Wow. So I would say I'll give you a few. Okay.
You can give me more than one answer here.
Absolutely. So if you come to Tempe, okay, which a lot of people are going to do, you want to go to Little Miss Barbecue.
Okay.
I think for a long time, it had the most reviews of any restaurant in the country and was still 5 stars in Yelp.
Wow.
Yes. You want to get, the brisket is incredible. You want to get the fatty brisket. There's fatty and lean. You want to get the fatty. You got to go early. There's 2 locations. One's only open for lunch. But you can go to the other location and they have dinner and pretty much, you know, most of the time there's less of a wait there. So go to the one that's the dinner. If you want to not have as much wait, get everything is good. It's absolutely, to me, it's probably, I know I'm biased cause I'm in Phoenix, but it probably is like the best, place that you could eat in any of the Pac-12 schools. Now, if you go to Los Angeles, okay, there's a lot of good restaurants in Los Angeles. I the place that a lot of people like to go to, especially before a game, is called Felipe the Original. It's a roast beef dip sandwich place, but you can also, they have 4 different types of meat, so it's not only roast beef. They actually pioneered the roast beef dip sandwich. What happened is literally over 100 years ago, a cop went into the restaurant and ordered a sandwich. They dropped his sandwich in the au jus, which they never served to people before. And he was in a hurry, so he asked them to wrap it up. And so he got it to go. He comes back the next day with 3 of his cop friends, and they wanted it exactly like that. And that's how, no that's exaggeration, incredible. That's how the roast beef dip sandwich started. So that's great. And then if you go up to Portland, which you could go to Portland for either Oregon State or Eugene's about 2 hours away, so maybe not as convenient, but there is a Cuban sandwich that is the best sandwich that I've ever maybe had up in the Pacific Northwest. So I could probably go on and on and on. There's Avery Brewing, which is like the best brewery in my opinion in Boulder, Colorado. There's tons of places. I could do a whole thing on this for your audience, but that's probably enough to keep people excited for a few of those stops.
Well, that's enough to get me very hungry. I don't even know if I'd ever heard of a dipped sandwich before, but I might have to find one now. I mean, that's not very like Northeastern. That's a little further down south, I think, where sandwiches like that come into play, and I think we're missing out a lot.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't know about a roast beef dip sandwich, then you got a lot of learning to do. I'm telling you right now.
I do. Well, Chris Cartman, Sun Devil Source, thank you for the football information, the food information, my condolences about the Suns. Hope to have you on soon. Maybe we'll be talking about how this 3-3-5 defense has catapulted Syracuse up the standings in the middle of the year. Thank you for coming on. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Absolutely. Anytime.
That was Chris Cartman of Sun Devil Source. Great stuff. Another thank you to him for taking the time. And he had a lot more in-depth stuff, a lot more of the details. So a little bit more to pick apart here. Ben, what is your big takeaway from that one?
Well, in terms of the 3-3-5, I love what he talked about with the unpredictability, because I really think that when you bring in that fifth defensive back who's kind of like a hybrid between a free safety and a linebacker, mm-hmm. the defense really doesn't know what you could do, almost in like a Bill Belichick-like way. You can line up in so many different defenses and really cause a headache for offensive linemen. But my biggest takeaway of the whole interview and relating back to what you said earlier about recruiting is the recruiting strength that Cartman feels White will have with guys that are being overlooked. Because Syracuse doesn't have a ton of success bringing in 4- and 5-star recruits in the past. Of course, they have one this year. But if White is able to identify undervalued players, he could get Syracuse talent that other schools are missing out on and get 4- or 5-star value guys at 2-3-star ratings. I think that could have a major impact on Syracuse becoming a DBU going forward.
I think one of my big things kind of goes back to the unpredictability you were talking about and how he talked about the immediate impact this could have and the higher rates of success that you could see in years one and year two because of, you know, how unseen this is in the ACC. Obviously, you're going to have teams that have kind of seen it here and there in a non-conference game, but there is not a team in the ACC that's going to be running this like Syracuse is. It's going to be throwing teams off, making prep weeks and your week of preparation coming to the Carrier Dome or prepping to play the Orange so much more difficult. And it's going to have that immediate impact and that immediate success in the first couple of years. But I think because of that adaptability, that unpredictability, you're going to be able to continue that success even once these teams have seen it a time or two because of how much you can change and how you can adapt to the offense you're facing. And you're basically putting guys in motion and calling audibles on the defensive side, trying to make trying to force the offense's hand as opposed to trying to adapt to what you're seeing on the offense. So a really confusing thing for offenses to see. If you get up against a young O-line, that's going to cause, you know, all sorts of havoc amongst them. So it's going to have that success. And the other thing that briefly stood out is to hear him talk about Tony White as a head coach potential. So to see that, you know, that strength on the defensive side, and maybe it means he leaves in a couple of years, but in order for him to leave, it means he's turned the Syracuse defense into one hell of a program. So I think I'd be okay with that, to see the Syracuse defense really come to life to the point where he's getting head coaching offers and getting looks to be a head coach. So two things right there that I think can really jump off the page, but a lot to look forward to out of Tony White. And I think if this season happens in 3-4 weeks now, we've got our knowledge of the 3-3-5 is there. Ideally for Syracuse's sake, opposing defenses aren't taken in on the little hints that Cartman gave on how to attack it, but a lot to take away from this. Thank you to Donnie Druin again. Thank you to Chris Cartman for the time. A lot of good information here, and we're going to try and keep diversifying these interviews, hearing from different voices that we're not necessarily hearing from in the central New York landscape. So to get these West Coast ideas was really fun, and I think that's where we'll leave off the episode this week with Ben Shulman. I'm Owen Valentine. This has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. If you've got a minute, find us wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a 5-star rating. Leave us a review. Give us a follow at Ostrom Avenue Pod on Twitter. We're inching closer to 100 followers on there. We want to breach that before we get back to classes, before this season starts. So before September 12th, that Saturday, let's breach 100 followers. Let's get this Ostrom Avenue community out in numbers and get past that century mark in terms of at Ostrom Avenue Pod on Twitter. That's going to be all for today. For Ben Shulman, Owen Valentine, the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, thank you so much. Stay safe. We'll catch you next week.